Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
We begin our program with a report on attacks in Syria. At least 60 people were killed in 3 bombings in the Syrian capital of Damascus on Sunday. The Islamic State terrorist group has claimed responsibility for the attacks. First, a car bomb exploded near a Shiite religious shrine. After rescue efforts began, 2 suicide bombers attacked, killing medical workers and others. The area had been attacked before. There have been several bombings near the shrine in the past few years. The attacks took place before Syria's main opposition group met with the United Nations Special Diplomat for Syria in Geneva, Switzerland. The diplomat is trying to bring together the Syrian opposition and the government to begin to negotiate an end to the country's civil war. This is As It Is from VOA, Learning English. In this year's United States presidential election, Donald Trump and Ted Cruz lead the Republican Party candidates among likely voters. On the Democratic Party side, Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton are almost even among potential voters. Ann Ball tells us why the upcoming Iowa caucus, or meeting of political party members, is so important for candidates of both major political parties.
Every 4 years, Americans go to the polls in November to pick a president. Americans will elect the next president in November of 2016. Although the election is still more than a year away, candidates have been announcing they are running for president. All of the candidates are most likely trying to raise the large amounts of money needed to make the run to the White House. The candidates will need the money to campaign in a series of caucuses and primaries just to win the nomination of their parties. Here is how they work. The Midwestern state of Iowa likes to be known as first. It is the first state to vote in a presidential election. Both parties, Democratic and Republican, meet in caucuses to vote for the candidate they want for president. Caucuses are more complicated than primaries. People who are registered in one of the parties gather for an evening of discussion and debate around the state. At the end of the night, everyone votes. All the votes across the state are counted, and each party declares a winner. Candidates receive delegates based on the number of votes they have. The delegates go to the party's convention later that year to choose the party's presidential nominee. Professor Larry Sabato of the University of Virginia Center for Politics says Iowa is important because it eliminates the weak candidates.
So you don't look to Iowa to see who wins. You really look to Iowa to see who loses badly so they can be eliminated.
Because it is the first state to vote, Iowa receives a lot of attention from both candidates and the press. Candidates start campaigning early. They drive all over the state to meet as many voters and shake as many hands as possible. Some even move their families to live in Iowa. Individual voters get a lot of attention. National reporters interview them for their opinions. This has become an American political tradition. The Iowa caucus became an important marker in the campaign back in 1972. Democratic Senator George McGovern did better than expected. He won the caucus and the attention of the media. Mr. McGovern went on to win the Democratic nomination for president, but he lost the national election in a landslide to Republican Richard Nixon. In 1976, Jimmy Carter was a little-known former governor of Georgia and a peanut farmer. He spent a year campaigning in Iowa. His effort paid off with a big victory in the caucus and later the White House. But these days, the person who wins the caucus does not always win the White House. Mr. Sabato says this is especially true for the Republicans.
The winner in Iowa, especially on the Republican side, often does not win the nomination. The last time around, 2012, Rick Santorum won the Iowa caucus, and of course, he didn't come anywhere close to being the nominee.
Mr. Sabato explains that the Republicans in Iowa are more conservative than those in New Hampshire, the next state to vote. By law, the state of New Hampshire always holds the first primary in the nation for a presidential election. While the northeastern state is small in both size and population, it has a large role in the election because it is the first primary. Mr. Sabato says the results there are often different than in Iowa. He says New Hampshire voters often do pick their party's nominee.
Partly that's because the New Hampshire voters, I believe, take their job very seriously in looking for the best possible candidate who can win in November. They don't always succeed, but they try a bit better and a bit harder than the Iowa caucus voters do.
As in Iowa, the candidates on both sides work the state, seeking votes with cameras and reporters close by. They sit in coffee shops and stand outside offices and shake hands and answer voters' questions. Unlike the caucus model, New Hampshire voters go to polling places where they vote privately in a voting booth. The winner in New Hampshire gets momentum for his or her campaign. However, it is not a definite sign of winning their party's nomination and then the White House. After all, there are many more states to campaign in across the country. And the big primaries, one named Super Tuesday, will come later in February or early March. That is when many states across the country will hold their primaries and caucuses. This includes the larger states with many delegates. Eventually, in the summer, both Democrats and Republicans will gather at their conventions to formally nominate their candidate to be the next president of the United States. I'm Ann Ball.
Recently, a Texas grand jury decided not to charge the healthcare organization Planned Parenthood with selling body parts of unborn children. This decision has angered many who oppose abortion. Kathleen Strzok has more.
A grand jury in Harris County, Texas, refused to file charges against Planned Parenthood. Instead, it filed charges against two people who made a secret video of Planned Parenthood employees. Those responsible for the video said they showed Planned Parenthood employees willing to sell body parts. Planned Parenthood and their supporters have said the video showed no illegal or unethical behavior. David Dalyden is one of the two people charged. The 27-year-old is the director of the anti-abortion group Center for Medical Progress. He was charged with damaging a government record because he allegedly created a fake driver's license. He was also charged with illegally purchasing human organs. In the video, Dalyden posed as a medical research employee interested in buying fetal tissue. Another Center for Medical Progress employee, Sandra Merritt, was also charged with damaging a government record. The grand jury's decision came after months of emotional debate, followed by the group's release of its secret videotapes last summer. Republicans in Congress have tried to end all federal funding for Planned Parenthood, but have failed. Republican presidential candidates promise to end funding for Planned Parenthood if they are elected. After the secret videos were released to the public, Planned Parenthood apologized for the casual way in which an employee discussed the transfer of fetal tissue and body parts. But, the organization said, the discussion centered on fees to cover Planned Parenthood costs, not profits. And it said the employee believed she was discussing a transfer with a real medical research company. Planned Parenthood said the grand jury's decision showed the charges against it were false. These anti-abortion extremists spent 3 years creating a fake company, creating fake identities, lying, and breaking the law, said Eric Ferrero, a Planned Parenthood vice president. When they couldn't find any improper or illegal activity, they made it up. Dalyden, the director of the Center for Medical Progress, defended his actions. The Center for Medical Progress uses the same undercover techniques that investigative journalists have used for decades in exercising our First Amendment rights of freedom of speech and the press, and follows all applicable laws, he said. Melissa Hamilton is a legal scholar at the University of Texas. She explains the reasons for the charges both Dalyden and Merritt face. If you are purporting to use a driver's license, which is a public record, that is beyond the pale, because there are reasons for society to want to protect the legitimacy of purported government records. Supporters and opponents of abortion rights had different reactions to the grand jury's decision. Greg Abbott is the governor of Texas and a Republican who opposes abortion. He said, "Nothing about today's announcement in Harris County impacts the state's ongoing investigation. The state of Texas will continue to protect life, and I will continue to support legislation prohibiting the sale or transfer of fetal tissue." But Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders said the decision shows that Republican attacks on Planned Parenthood are wrong. The Texas grand jury decision undercuts the entire Republican attack on Planned Parenthood, Sanders said. Planned Parenthood is doing an excellent job and should be supported and expanded, not defunded. I'm Kathleen Strzok.
In our next story, an 8-year-old girl describes what it was like when United States federal agents entered her home looking for undocumented immigrants. Mary Gottschall has more.
The United States recently launched a campaign to expel illegal immigrants from Central America. The Obama administration targeted people who stayed after they were told to leave the country. Government agents detained 121 Central Americans, many of them women and children. VOA's Carolyn Prasuti recently spoke with a number of undocumented migrants just after their homes were raided. They came to the U.S. mainly for economic reasons. Their full names are not made public because of the sensitivity of the issue. Maria, age 8, said she was cleaning her teeth and preparing to go to school when she heard a noise at the door. She opened the door and found 8 immigration agents. I said, "Who are you?" And they didn't tell me their names. They said, "Is there a grown-up here?" And I said, "Yes," she continued. Maria said she was trying to be brave, knowing they would never get my family because my family hasn't done anything bad. But Maria's Aunt Sophia is in the United States illegally. So are other adults who were not at home when the agents arrived. Sophia hid in a ground floor bedroom with her 3 baby boys during the raid. Agents went room to room but never looked in the basement. I thought they were going to enter the room with my children there and take me, Sophia said. While she was able to avoid getting detained by the immigration agents, Sophia said she is still full of fear. Now I don't know what I can do. I'm not even going to the grocery store anymore. I'm scared to go, she said. The Obama administration said the raids are designed to send a message to people in Central America. It wants to prevent more mass migration to the United States. The administration wants to avoid a repeat of the 2014 immigration crisis. 2 years ago, tens of thousands of Central Americans were traveling across the Mexican border. Many were children. Jay Johnson heads the federal agency that organized the raids. Our borders are not open to illegal migration, said Johnson, Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. If you come here illegally, we will send you back, consistent with our laws and values. Immigrant advocates call the raids inhumane. Cecilia Wang is director of the American Civil Liberty Union's Immigrants' Rights Project. She says the administration is doubling down on a system that is rigged against these families. Many of these mothers and children had no lawyers because they could not afford them. Without counsel, traumatized refugees don't understand what is happening in court and cannot get their legitimate asylum claims heard. But 2 candidates for the Republican presidential nomination, Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, want to do much more. Both said they would try to expel all estimated 11 million illegal immigrants in the United States. Trump also promises to build a fence along the Mexican border and get Mexico to pay for it. You're going to have a deportation force, and you're going to do it humanely, he said on MSNBC. Don't forget that you have millions of people that are waiting in line to come into this country, and they're waiting to come in legally. And I always say the wall, we're going to build the wall. It's going to be a real deal. It's going to be a real wall. Immigration activists have reacted to the recent raids by holding meetings and handing out Know Your Rights cards. The cards have the following message in both English and Spanish. I do not give you permission to enter my home based on my Fourth Amendment rights under the U.S. Constitution, unless you have a warrant. Maria, 8, tells VOA she does not plan to get to that point. I've learned to never open the door and to look out the window, she says. I'm Mary Gottschall.
Next, we bring you a report on a recent trend in Thailand. Christopher Jones Cruz reports.
It's the biggest craze in Thailand. Life-size dolls, believed to possess the spirits of child angels, have become popular in recent months. The dolls, known in Thai as Luktip, are believed to bring good fortune. These dolls are purchased for hundreds of dollars and are blessed by Buddhist monks. Many owners attend to the dolls as if they are their children. Shops are selling clothing, jewelry, and beauty treatments for the dolls. A buffet restaurant in the Thai capital, Bangkok, offers them children's meals. But the privileges spent on them have also drawn concern and warning from authorities and psychologists in Thailand. Natasud Taifan is director of psychological wellness at Chulalongkorn University. She says if the dolls help their owners feel better, then the fad is rather harmless. But if it crosses the boundary of reality, and they believe they can talk to the Luktip doll, that would be something concerning in terms of mental health, she said. Thai mental health officials have issued an appeal for people to stick to mainstream religious values and reject such unbelievable things. But the belief is rooted in ancient Southeast Asian superstitions. Traditionally, when babies were stillborn, some spiritual leaders in Thailand and other countries in the region took the babies away. They roasted the bodies, blessed them, and covered them in gold leaf. In Thailand, such household divine effigies are known as Kumantong for male figures and Hong Tra for female ones. The practice has mostly stopped. But the dolls might represent a return to a more superstitious age. I'm really wondering how part of Thai society has come to this point, said Sirmsa Kasitpradit, a veteran editor and popular blogger. As a Buddhist, I am feeling much shame, as it is totally against the teaching of our Lord Buddha, who preached not to believe in superstition, Sirmsa told VOA. Others worry that the modern incarnations may be put to evil use, according to authorities. Nearly 200 Yaba methamphetamine pills were found Monday stuffed into the chest of a girl doll. The doll had been placed in a suitcase for retrieval in the airport at Chiang Mai, said Police Lieutenant Colonel Kam Chakkontod. Another police official said the dolls give criminals a new way to smuggle drugs into the country. Now all officers at airport and border checkpoints are instructed to screen dolls. Police officers on Tuesday carried out raids in Bangkok against doll vendors suspected of avoiding import taxes. Three vendors were arrested, and authorities seized more than 100 looked-at dolls, mostly imported from China. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
We end today's program with a story about one of the most rarely photographed animals in the world, bush dogs. Kathleen Strzok has more.
Scientists say they have captured photographs of one of the most mysterious known animals, bush dogs. Bush dogs live in Central and South America. They are a rarely seen and threatened species. But the photos suggest they may be more common than scientists thought. Scientists use cameras that take photos in the forest when an animal passes by. Photos of the bush dogs were taken in wild areas of Panama. The traps can be found across the country from its Costa Rican border to its border with Colombia. Ricardo Moreno is a research associate for the Smithsonian Institution. He and a team of biologists from Yaguara, Panama, are studying large wild mammals in that country. He says the bush dog is one of the rarest species that we photograph. The researchers describe the animals as short-legged and stubby, standing only about a foot tall at the shoulder. Like other dogs, bush dogs hunt in packs of up to 10. They are known to communicate to each other using high-pitched whines. They eat mostly large forest rodents. The bush dog is so elusive that photos of the animal were made only 11 times over 32,000 camera days. That is the number of cameras multiplied by the days in operation. The International Union for Conservation of Nature says bush dog populations have dropped by up to 25% over the past 12 years. It is considered a near-threatened species. Humans do not hunt or directly threaten bush dogs, but habitat loss is affecting their numbers. They live mainly in rainforests. Scientists think the animals may require large forest spaces to survive. It is estimated that Panama lost 15% of its rainforest from 1990 to 2010. I'm Kathleen Strzok.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.